Welcome to Watchmen Talk, your number one source for all things relating to HBO's Watchmen series. It's a series that has concluded for the moment, possibly forever, where everybody seems to be on the fence. It was so good. We saw the end of things, we saw the beginning of things, we saw new characters, we saw old characters, we saw love stories and healing and the lines, and it's probably one of the only HBO shows I've actually cried watching, which was a new experience. I think everybody there's a lot to unpack here. We're gonna cover predictions for a potential season two. There's not gonna be one, but everybody keeps talking about this as a season one thing, so who knows where HBO is going with this. In the meantime, my co-hosts are here, and let's just get started, everybody. What did we think?
Do we want to start with, like, overall how we felt about it?
Yeah.
Do we do the episode, or do we do the whole show?
Well, let's do the whole show at the end, but we'll start with the episode.
I was, like, 80-20 with it, so it was amazing. There were a lot of amazing parts. I had problems with Veidt on multiple levels. One, I didn't feel like he was being written like the same guy from Watchmen. I know it's years later, but it just wasn't. And we'll talk about that as we go through the episode. And the other part that I didn't like was that you went through the trouble of removing this white guy who had, you know, been the mastermind of the last one, putting him on another planet. And then in the end, he had him save the day rather than, you know, letting the multiple people of color on the cast save the day.
Yeah, and I don't know. It felt like they wasted Jeremy Irons this whole season, but he had to be wasted because Angela Abar was so good. And if I had to pick a second season, truthfully, for me, I would be fine if they took this exact same story and told it from the perspective of, like, Lady True, because I would really like to know her whole meaning behind it. And I have some pretty... Veidt is a genuinely shitty person, and he got what he deserved with the whole Lady True and Lady Beyond. We're just going to call Beyond, even though Beyond's her daughter and her mother, and the whole Beyond thing as well. And I think Veidt respected it, but it's that whole opening scene really bothered me.
Yeah.
I didn't make any sense. So this was like right after he talked about how he was going to meditate in Utopia and blah, blah, blah. Right after that, he flies, like, literally right after that, he flies to Vietnam to record this ridiculous thing with a giant group of workers that didn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, I mean, he didn't need anybody to record a video. He was in his Arctic lab. He could have stayed there for a long time and figured things out. I don't get it.
Yeah, I guess. Well, sorry, I'm gonna just give my opinion because we're kind of getting into discussion.
Oh, I was gonna get into it, but I guess we're gonna just.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, you can go first, and I go after you.
No, you go first if you want to actually talk about if you like the episode or not. I mean, if we're gonna just keep going, but I like the episode. Actually, love the episode. I don't think Veidt saved the day. I think he stopped a problem and created a huge. An insanely huge other problem, just like the end of the novel. So this whole idea that a white guy saved the day is completely false. He didn't save the day. A lot of people died. And he just stopped a tiny portion of one thing from happening. So I don't really think that that was the case. I don't know what, like, I, regardless of anything else, I think that this episode was like the coolest way to tie in every single storyline, that almost every single important storyline that we've seen in like the most batshit way that I've ever seen a television show do. It really tied in everything all together, and I was completely surprised, even from all the way to the egg and the fact that he really did give her a present, and all the stuff. And like, it was just, I thought it was really beautifully woven in. Like, yeah, there, I had a couple issues with certain things that, like, loose ends or whatever, but that's just like a Damon Lindelof show, and you're always gonna have questions at the end. But at the end of the day, I thought that they really stuck the landing.
Yeah, I guess I really liked it as well, but like, I have some issues with stuff like Lori. I feel like she had her one good episode. Well, I mean, I guess this is a full show thing, but I feel like she wasn't utilized very well in this episode at all. And there was just a couple of things, like characters that weren't used well or got dropped in less couple episodes, really, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I almost wonder if it could have been, if they had like another episode or two to do certain things, to like just give a little bit more space to everything. It may have felt like I had more closure, I guess, in a way. But I mean, I'm not gonna spend all time being negative. So I did like it a lot. But
no, I like 80% of it, I thought was awesome, and I had an amazing time, and my husband loved every second of it. It's just, and you're right with Lori. I think we should discuss when we get to that point. Is like, I know she arrested him at the end, but other than that, was this the exact same thing that happened to her last time?
Yeah, but she did come in, and she did come in, and she was kind of the critical one who told Angela and Bian to, you know, get undercover. And I really appreciated that as far as the development of her character. I think the problem with Watchmen is that you could focus so much on so many other characters. And if we didn't go into Angela Avar's Manhattan in a potential future season, I would love to see Lori come to grips with that, or even just have the fans talk about, you know, what it would take to have her come to grips with the fact that she's literally been an observing player. But also at the same time, you know, we can't dismiss the fact that she's changed as a person. And so truthfully, is she's not Lori from the comics. She's, you know, she's got more of her father, and she's got, you know, more of her mother and like the different elements of her mother. But truth, I don't think that could have been any person. She's fundamentally rejected what it means to be a masked anything. So even if her story, sometimes in life, and this is depressing, but I've learned this, sometimes in life, there are people whose whole job is just to sit on the sidelines. And to, you know, they have their moments and they have their hero stories, but it's nothing grandiose. It's just, you know, the world can't function without people who are cleaning up, without people who are, you know, doing this. And every person is special, and every person is this and that and the other thing. But we have to face facts as we move forward into 2020, that there are a lot of people who are, you know, just mediocre. And the whole point of living, perhaps, is to try and move past it. Lori's not a mediocre person. She's the person that needs to clean up the messes. And I think everybody's superhero stories is so committed because the superhero stories focus on, you know, these big, grander, larger than life characters. It was kind of refreshing. And, you know, as much as I'd love to see her go after Petey, I mean, it was kind of, her story kind of did feel concluded. So I don't think we can look at it in terms of her being underutilized. Look at it in terms of her being Nick Fury. Nick Fury is a character who you could write comic book, or Coulson. I'm looking at my aging Coulson Funko right now from Marvel. She's Coulson. Coulson, you could write comic book after comic book about him. But truthfully, he's a pencil pusher. And people love him for it. And so I loved Lori, and I thought that they did they could go other places, or if they just decided to conclude her here, that would be perfect. But, you know, so that's my two cents on Lori. And that's my...
This isn't Lori's show. This is Angela's story. So like anyone who's being underutilized or whatever, any character was served for Angela's story. So that's really what it is. Yeah. I mean, so I don't really feel anything about, I think Lori's story and the way Jean Smart played it and acted it was beautiful. Her reactions, her snark, just everything. I think it was beautifully played. I think she finally got to rectify a wrong that she feels that she did years ago when she didn't speak up about Adrian. Now she feels that she's going to do that. And I don't know if it's going to work or whatever, but I feel like I thought her arc was, you know, as a side character, because that's what she was, a supporting character in Angela's story, because this is Angela's story. That's what it is.
It did seem like trying to rewrite. Oh, sorry, trying to rewrite that bit, because they do go off in the owl ship, and it is kind of basically a better version of Rorschach, or a, you know, when a decent human, I don't want to say decent human being, when someone who's a bit more well adjusted, Rorschach is able to bring Adrian to justice, and maybe in this case, Laurie is kind of taking the nine owl position. What could have happened had they been able to take Adrian in?
Sure. I mean, honestly, we you could spend so much time on the people that we felt were underutilized, but the ultimate goal, let's just break it down, guys. Let's take us through the finale to Watchmen, the story of Sister Knight and Angela Abar, and truthfully, the way that Manhattan and Abar came off. Manhattan found, I said it in episode 8, Manhattan found his one true love, and that was, like, really emotional to watch. That wasn't what made me cry, but when we get there.
Yeah, before we get into it, I do want to, just as a small rebuttal, I guess, in a way, is, I guess, like, my problem is, I feel like she was used well as a foil to Angela, like, in that early episode, but then from the last two, like, I don't understand what her being kidnapped and having been there, and then, like, I almost feel like she wasn't necessary. Like, it almost would have made more sense if had she just left, had that one episode or one or two episodes and then just left, because in that sense, she's underutilized, I guess, because she didn't do it, she wasn't purposeful, and it felt, to me, that felt weird. But, I mean, it is what it is, I guess.
All right, let's get into it. So we have the opening scene where we have, right, Lady True coming through the snow. Yeah.
Yes, in that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful coat. And she's knocking on the door. And I think it's Veidt's whole expression, because when she's knocking on the door and Veidt opens the door and he's just like, you know, you're a fan, and I'm like, do you really have people trekking up to Antarctica, bro, to see you? Like, who is that much of a, I mean, like, I got some actors I'm fans of, I got things, but there's no way I would literally, that's just, is that, or is he making it up? Because I feel like he's making it up.
This is, maybe, but this is, this, I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, the Veidt from before would have known she was coming. So that kind of was, like, interesting to me. They're like, she walks up to the door. He knew that Manhattan was there. You know, he knew, and every time someone comes to visit him, he knows for, you know, days before they get there. So what was it that he didn't know? I mean, did he not want to know, or did he just want to see what she was about, or to test her?
It's weird that he didn't know that the sample was tampered with. If we're going to things he should know, I guess it's like, he should know, like, should there not be some kind of, this was opened at so-and-so time?
Yeah, it's...
Why would he if he's completely secure in his power? I mean, if you're looking
but
at it...
But it was weird. I mean, like, why would you keep it in, like, in your office? Well,
that,
it's just weird.
That's kind of a, like, a megalomaniac thing. I can understand that.
But he's a planner. I mean, like, I know that we keep saying he's a megalomaniac, but in the first book, a lot of that narcissism or observed narcissism, yes, he likes to talk and pontificate and whatever, but he had purpose behind what he was doing. Like, he didn't do anything without it having some kind of purpose.
Yeah, but why would you need purpose if you literally succeeded in your whole life's goal?
Right. I just feel like, yeah, so, we spent a whole season witnessing him kind of driving himself, going insane, and then creating this elaborate game to keep himself sane. So I don't really see, I guess I'm not really getting the, I don't know. Well, I just, he's a megalomaniac. I guess, like, that's really what I chalk it up to.
If he's a megalomaniac, it also says something. The whole theme of the series, at least from what I have understood, is the idea of white power and white privilege. When Lindenhoff, I'll link you guys to the article in our group DMs, but Lindenhoff mentioned that, you know, as far as the genesis of Lady True went, first it was a man, then it was a boy, then it was a man, then it was a white man, then it was a Vietnamese man, then it was a Vietnamese woman. And you have to respect that when you're in a position of power and privilege, you're not, don't matter how much you plan, you're gonna miss people who have, you know, you're not gonna think in terms that people of color could usurp you or surpass you.
But this that's what Lindelof wanted to make, right? But yes. I don't believe that was anything that was ever in the character originally. He was the most liberal of all the Watchmen, including Dr. Manhattan. And to suddenly make him now, he's a racist. And I get that even the liberalist of white person has, you know, is bound to have some racist tendencies. That fine, I accept that. But it's just
most
so
of them
not...
do. No. Wendy. No, but I don't think you do, because this is the liberals turning out to be closet racist or having prejudice or whatever. That's literally a huge issue that most people of color, most black people have with the Democratic Party, with most liberal people in this country. This is, Adrian Veidt represents lots of liberal billionaires and millionaires and a lot of elitists that we're like, yeah, you're trying to make the world a better place, but you also look down on people of color. That is who Veidt has always, I've always felt Veidt has always been. So I don't know. I know you got your Veidt like fangirl thing, and I have my Manhattan fangirl thing. I get it, but like I truly do. To look at it, like you have to understand that is the frame that this show is going with. That's the people who are trying to do all the right things in all the wrong ways, because they think that they're doing the best way. Their way is the best way. You know what I mean? Well, and that's literally Veidt's a cornerstone of his personality. You know what I mean? And that's fundamentally a shitty way of thinking. It is.
I don't know if that's in the original book. No, I'm not saying that people aren't like this. I'm just saying
it literally is in the book. What?
Well, but does he not see people because they're not white in the book? I mean, that in the book
the book is more nebulous. The show takes it very literal and draws direct parallels to racism and white supremacy in this country. Alan Moore went in a very subversive way to tackling vigilantism and in this country, and the way it literally works, the two concepts are not alien to each other, but the way Damon took his you know the book is the way it was, a natural progression of it. Like Alan Moore is a liberal, yes. I'm not saying he's a perfect liberal. No white liberal is perfect. That's point blank, and you can fight me on that, but that's point blank. And so that's what I think the idea of Veidt is he encompasses this the white billionaire or white genius or whatever who really does think that they're doing well. Like anyone call him an Elon Musk, that's like bonkers, but they think that they're doing something. They think that they're doing something, but they're actually just causing more headaches for everyone else involved at the end of the day.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. I'm not going to pretend that I wholly understand how people of color relate to people in power and authority, particularly those like Veidt. All we can do is say that the book's interpretation was pretty nebulous. And as we've discussed, it was written for 1985. This is 2019. So I could see that very, and one of the things that I've noticed and observed, especially in social media, not just Twitter, but everywhere else, is that people have a very real unwillingness to impact. If you're on the good side, if you're on the Democrats' side or whatever, you have a very real willingness to not unpack the problems with that issue. Veidt's finally met an intellectual equal as far as his work. And she knows that Dr. Manhattan is on Earth, which leads me to believe, and naturally she would, because her mother told her she was related to. So she's probably studied all of these things. And from there, we go back to Veidt, yes?
Yeah, on Europa.
On Europa, in the midst of his birthday celebration. And you know something? They never answered the question of the horseshoe. Early.
They didn't give him a cake this year either. That was the more interesting
thing. Yeah, it was the old one, right?
Yeah. So he's got the he digs in and the cake's rotting at this point, and he digs in and he grabs the horseshoe and he's just kind of plucking it out. And I just figured out as I'm sitting here talking about this, I know why the cake existed and was a thing, because he was counting the days until his broke. So I'm like,
yeah.
Oh.
Actually, he did it like to the day. Yeah.
Yeah. I literally, when that happened, when she said the date or whatever, I like physically said out loud to my husband, like, that's why he did the thing with the thing. And he was like, what? Oh, right. This, I guess this part makes sense now. I was like, yes. That was a nice, like, little moment where I was like, that was cool that she, like, I'm assuming they explained that she planned how she figured that out or planned that out. That she was going to send a thing. No?
Specifically which part, sorry.
Like how she was going to know she was going to send that to get him, or she just guessed or just throw out a random.
I think she saw the picture and then, I mean, technology's advanced a lot since she sent out the probe, so I assume she was able to get there faster.
I thought she had an exact date, or maybe I made that up.
Well, she had a calculation for how often her thing went around. Europa, or received the images or something like that.
Okay, that makes maybe that was the one I was thinking of. Okay, that makes sense.
He picked him up and then encased him in the gold.
That was the weirdest theory.
No, we should actually talk about the wording.
Yeah.
When they had like a little duel.
He caught the bullet. That was so good.
A little nerd. I hate him.
There was a lot of like little homages like that to the original comic that felt like, let's see how much we can toss in and walk to the spaceship.
There is something so like thrilling about seeing Adrian or seeing the original suit, like his Ozymandias suit in full color, like in live action, the shoes, they like even focus on the kicks and everything, him walking up the steps. Like the suit, the costume is so ridiculous and in all its glory. Yeah. And I'm so glad that they went all for it. Cause that was one of the biggest things that I didn't like about the Watchmen film was that. It was like, oh, we're going to make it more cool. But I didn't appreciate like the gilded look that he went for in Watchmen. That maybe I just made it in my head, but they called it back with gilding him when he traveled or whatever, because it kind of looks like literally like just melted in gold. But yeah, I thought that like the purple and the gold is beautiful. I just love seeing it in that. And then the crown.
Can we talk about the line real quick, that starvation and madness and insanity and like all that, because that was like, oh, that was such an Adrian thing to say. Wendy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You mean about the ship? I can get that exact line from the script. Hold on, give me a second.
Do they like upload that online, or do you have like a source?
I do. I have. So the people that do the closed captioning, I think these are just the closed captions from the show. Is it insanity? To prevent dehydration, starvation, and potential insanity, please step into the chamber for preservation. And then it says specifically, would you place your hands on your hips, please? Now that should have been a sign that maybe this was not all that was cracked up to me. When I was little, I used to have a nightmare about getting encased in wax. Oh, so this is very scary for me.
And I mean, it's not the Thunderbolt, but it is a Charlton kind of reference, if you want to take it that way, where Captain Atom, he had the metal injected under his skin. So I felt like, oh, that's a little something there. But
it also reminded me of like, you know, how like action figures, you know, when you buy them off the shelves and like in their like original casing or whatever, it literally looked just like that. It was dope.
We need to go on Twitter and get pictures of his action figure versus him standing.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god.
So he's been put on the ship and he's flying back to Earth, and it puts the entire scenes in 6 and 7 in the Veritorium. Why am I drawing a blank on it? Well, the Veritorium in an entirely new context, because now we know it was him inside that statue.
Yeah.
Did we have that theory? Did we have that theory that he would, like, maybe he's inside there?
Yeah, I actually saw someone had a batch of theory like that, and I think I talked about it, and we all kind of were like, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I think I remember seeing that. But yeah,
I guess more like Dorian Gray, like, is he aging with him or something? That's where I was at. I was the statue.
So we literally, we
Han Solo reference, yeah.
We've called most of the twists in this. So we have Adrian on his way back to Earth, and presumably he is the probe that landed. Mm-hmm. And so now we understand a little bit more of the time loop.
Relatively.
Yeah, the only one who really understands anything is Dr. Manhattan. and then we go back. I'd like to thank all my co-hosts, ladies and gentlemen, for you guys listening at home, because they keep chronological notes while I just scribble useless things in Google Docs. So thank you very much to Wendy, Vanessa, and Tony for keeping me honest, because where do we go after we send Vite back to Earth?
My next note is about Lori with the being like captured and learning that we were correct on our Wade theory of him having infiltrated them. I don't know if there was something before that.
Wade came so through.
Yeah, I'm so excited that he was just like popped up. And like, I also love that he was like, they had their little exchange that she called him Mirror Guy, and he was like,
yes.
Classic.
He's truly a legend. Probably my favorite after Angela on this show.
Yeah, agreed.
Same. Honestly, I think that the fact that he used, you know, because he was a character that was definitely the sort of stereotype, and I think we all went in thinking that he was going to be Rorschach, but he took Rorschach, and it was like Wendy said earlier, and I believe it was also like you said, Vanessa, where he was kind of, no, it was when he said that he was kind of like the anti-Rorschach. And that, to me, was pretty freaking fabulous. Mm-hmm. So he and her are talking, and then they bring in Senator Keynes Sr. And dad and son have a moment. And I kind of want to briefly talk about this moment, because I was reading an article today about little boys and sexuality. And it was in the Atlantic, and it was very, as a trans person, I kind of read it, and I was like, I really hope you actually talk to, you know, trans masculine people in this. But the idea of toxic masculinity and such being so circular, like, it came from his dad, and it went down to him, and he learned it. And the subtle parallels to evangelicalism and how it was corrupted, because they're all these people are sitting in the church. Well, Keen is standing there, and all these people, and he gives them that little culture war sermon. I gotta tell you that.
Oh, hit... right.
Because it was all he was talking about was the Gate movement and the Comicsgate movement and the Gamergate movement, and there's all of these people who think, and rightfully so, because if you control. I once had an argument, actually, with my dad about, you know, how did you, you know, would you, if you wanted to sway people's minds, would you want to take control of business, or would you want to take control of culture? And after everything that I've learned, you want to make sure to take control of culture. And I don't know if I'm right or wrong on that, but that's why he was like, we're going to have a culture war. And then he was like, no. Mm-hmm. And he confirmed that the guy got teleported, and that's how they knew.
To Gila Flats, New Mexico. I love the way you said it. Cool. I have, like, a love for this accent.
That really answered, like, most of the questions we had about that night.
Yeah.
He didn't zap somebody. He teleported. Well, I guess that's zapping, too.
But I guess I'm still confused as far as where did he get zapped somewhere, too? Because he kind of disappeared and...
Who?
John or Cal.
John? Cal?
Oh, Cal. Oh.
Yeah, on the White Knight.
On White Knight.
Okay. In that scene, okay, like, it explained, the teleporting bad guy explains why the number of shooters didn't match up, but it does not explain what happened to him at that moment?
I think it to me, it feels like he, because they explain that, like, he kind of, like will, like, have a reflex that he'll just protect. But I don't think he went full blue. So, like, it was probably just while he was, and then he just went back to, like, oh, shit, Angela's hurt, you know? Like, it may have been, like,
he may have, like, zapped out of, like,
visibility. Yeah, like, he probably had no memory of it is what I was kind of thinking. Because if he did, he literally, that would change the course of the entire thing. But I feel like it was just, like, a reflex, like, you know, your knee, when someone hits your knee and your leg kicks out, like, and then he just kind of, like, then he saw, like, Angela lying on the ground. So maybe Judd filled in the blanks, essentially, when Angela woke up in the hospital. I feel like that's probably the same thing. They just accepted it.
Okay, yeah, I guess that works then. It's just, well, yeah. Almost like that's almost like a no prize explanation.
Right, yeah, I know. I mean, that's what I kind of, yeah, no, I kind of figured it was just him being like, oh, yeah, all right, cool.
Well, and Keen mentioned, Keen was talking about the Crawfords and how they made their plan and how, you know, and everybody was sitting there, and I tweeted out that, like, all of his talking points actually existed, and they do, and then in true fashion, Keen takes off his pants and he's wearing.
Oh my god!
That was so embarrassing.
I know, I have secondhand embarrassment. Ajit Smart comes in, and Vanessa, do you want to do that fantastic line? Because
No, I can't remember the exact line, but she was like, "Why are you in panties or something?"
It's like, you look so stupid in those panties.
I love Lori so much, and she just never misses a beat. She just, like, the only time she ever stuttered in this was when it was people she cared about. This, she just was like, of course you're an idiot. Like, I loved it so much. And those ugly things that he was wearing, of course he was wearing them during Manhattan's Vietnamese era.
It's so weird, though. Like, why would you put that on? Was he just going to pretend that he was the original Manhattan or something?
He that was, to them, that's kind of like the height of toxic masculinity, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Walking through Vietnam, zapping people with your finger.
Yeah.
So it was just the coolest looking Manhattan to him. So he was like, that's the one I'm going to be.
Yeah, like, because I know they made a point of it saying, like, he had, like, different uniforms throughout his period of being, like, a superhero. So, like the fact that he chose that one when that was, like, the image of that was, like, him literally being a giant over Vietnam. I feel like that's why he probably chose that.
Okay. I mean, it's still weird, like, I'll just...
Oh, yeah, he's wearing a black diaper, like...
Can't just go to Walmart or something. Podcast. You can't just go to Walmart and, like, get some normal shorts. I don't know.
I'm just gonna. Well, here I am making remarks about toxic masculinity, and my first thing that pops into my head is a very uncomplimentary remark by Senator Keen. If you really wanted to prove that you were half the man Manhattan was, you would go full commando, sir.
He likes to lie about it, but it's just not, you know.
It's no Excalibur. it's Needle from Game of Thrones.
Oh my god. It's Needle.
Oh, I'm truly, truly an awful person, and I'm sorry, everybody. I just betrayed my principles. But so they had that very real, you know, they had that very real dialogue. The Lady True shows up. And... No, Lady True does not show up. We were talking about Angela because we're trying to figure in Angela.
Oh, yeah, she busts in, yeah.
And this is, Vanessa, you and I wanted to talk about this because I noticed it too. Angela, it has every reason to be very, very, very angry. And she, especially with Keen, and Keen draws it out of her. He calls her some names, and I know that he probably would have called her the N-word, but at least in my head.
But this isn't, like, Quentin Tarantino. Written.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the only time they've used that word is during the flashback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that and the, where they the almost lynching of Will. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they've really avoided it, which is...
You're right. Actually, yeah, agreed. I didn't even realize that until you just mentioned that. The only time they've ever... used it was in his flashbacks, which is appropriate because that makes sense.
It's a personal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but so he calls.
Yeah, me too. I agree on that.
I have some thoughts on, well, not on that, but not in a bad way. I just put together something in my head, and I'm not gonna put it together in the thing. But I will. Anyway, I'm so sorry, folks. I am really tired, and we all are, because that
episode... exhausted. Yeah, I know. Honestly, like, I was up late trying to just, like, thinking about it.
and it's the holiday season, so I want to thank everybody for being willing to bear with us. But we're talking about Keen, and we're talking about Angela. Now, Angela has every reason to be angry, but Angela still tries to warn Keen about Lady True and about how his stupid scene while he's standing there in his stupid panties is like not going to work. And from my perspective, it showed the absolute utter stupidity and lack of survival instinct that power brings to you. Because if you have all of the power, why would you need to focus on other people? And he had all the power in that scene, and Angela still tried to help him. And Vanessa, what did you think?
I agree with you. I had two thoughts on the A, when she busts in and Lori sees her and she goes, Angela. And that was just like a little Angela moment for me. I love that for me specifically. I just love their bond. It was so, I wish we had gotten a little bit more in the in-betweens, but I know we had to build up and figure and know more about Will and her whole and Angela's story. But I just love that in that moment, we get to really see like how much Lori actually like really cares about Angela. But also I really and truly enjoyed seeing the layers of Angela in that moment. She was like, I'm not here for a gunfight. I'm not here to, I want him to be safe, but you guys have to know that this is all, y'all are idiots. This is not a part of your plan. Yeah. This is not, you guys are not the masterminds here. And she was like, it's just such a, something that, women of color just do. We just kind of have to listen. We kind of all have to survive here. So I know you're a racist, dumbass piece of shit, and you're wearing panties right now. But we need to work together so that we all don't die from this crazy bitch who's smarter than us. All of us combined, she's the bigger threat. Let's figure this out. I appreciated Angela in that moment, even though she like, after him insulting her and all that and just being gross and like standing there with his panties on, I just appreciated her in that moment, because that's a thing that it's hard to do. But she just didn't. Yeah. I just appreciated it.
I think she now knows that Cal was Dr. Manhattan, and she knows that he was with Angela, and it just like, we were all having that moment, like, how's she going to react? And she reacted by being really happy to see Angela there.
I loved it so much. My OT3. I really did love honestly, Jean Smart is such an actress, like, because her face when Manhattan gets transported there, when they explain the plan and all of that, like, her just everything was silent. It was like you could just feel it, even if they didn't get to have a conversation. And I know I saw some people disappointed by that. I think that Lori carried a lot of weight, because at that point they were done. Like, there was really nowhere for their story to go unless you really wanted to address the way the relationship started, which is something that I've always wanted it to be addressed. But that's not the direction the show wanted to go. But I appreciate Jean Smart and Lori in making Lori's her devastation feel real, especially in comparison to Angela's later on. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, she really. I think at that point she'd like given up or given him up or just been like, you know, made peace, and to see him so everybody was really, you'd have to be really united, because this is a being that a lot of people really care about and a lot of people borderline worship that's in a cage, and they painted that stupid fucking logo right behind it, because you can't, everything about the Cyclops and everything about these guys just screamed. It just screamed terrible. Yes, it screamed try hard. And then you get glowing orb. If you want to talk about try hard, then we have a giant glowing orb.
And an egg.
Yeah.
It's an egg.
Yeah. You know what? I'm looking at a picture. No, I was looking at a picture. I agree. But I was also looking at a picture of Manhattan, and like, I realized like the egg yolk, it looks like his the symbol on his head, forehead. Like when you crack an egg open,
yeah.
It literally looks the same thing. I'm like, I just realized, I don't know if ever, or maybe everyone else realized. I was like,
You could say like the little dot. Well, I would say like even that little dot for the electron. You could say, because I mean, like, there's a main dot, which is like
right.
The nucleus of the atom or whatever. But the little electron, you could say that's like, you know how eggs have like the little like white part? That's, I guess, it feeds like the baby chicken in there, mm-hmm. partially or something connected.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if it was a human, it'd be like placenta. That you got a little fiber that could be. So that really works, I think.
I like it. No, I like the egg. I like that it's an egg. I love the egg, like, metaphors and allegories and messaging. It's so weird, but it makes sense.
Well, once you hear... So, once we get to the end of the episode, I want to point out about that, because the song that plays over the end made me really do a double take.
Carolyn! I had another Carolyn was right moment. So... when he's walking to the spaceship, Blue Danube is playing in the background, which was the song that played in the background in, 2001, when the spaceship is taking off into space.
Oh my god, that's funny.
And I was like, oh, are they really going there?
Yes. Well, there's the great thing about all of this is that there are cultural... You know, the Watchmen really touched on a lot of aspects of culture, and it shows even, and they brought it back to the newsstand, because Lady True steps out, and we have giant floating egg, and now we all understand what the Millennium Clock was. It was the egg clock. It was literally an egg timer. Mm-hmm.
It's just a clock.
It was an egg.
It's literally just a clock.
But so she goes up and she talks to the newspaper guy, and she picks up her papers and she mentions that she won't be in this body for very much longer, which turns out to be very prescient. And you know, technically true. And then we return to Cal, and we return to the scene of all of this, and. Tony, you said that you thought you'd been there. Is there some kind of park there where they filmed it?
Okay, I was actually there today as well. And, it is like, it's just like a court, like, it really is just an empty space. Like, I guess they hold events or something there, but what's like there in that actual, it's like a weird statue, which I think they turned the statue into a phone, to the Manhattan phone. Because otherwise, I was looking, I actually like paused and I was like, okay, what is this orientation they're showing? What is everything at that's normally there? So it really is just like an open space, like during the week. I'm sure they hold like events and stuff. Like you could probably rent it out, that kind of thing. Those blue things are always there though, the poles on the sides, which is weird because you think they are sci-fi things for the show, but no, they are always there. And it really is like, it's just like I walk over that area to get through to the Starbucks, which is why I'm over there. There are a lot of Pokestops there if you up in the area, but
Lady True wanted to conquer the gym, and so she brought a giant
Pokemon. She's the ultimate gym leader.
That's the big question. Is there Pokemon Go in the Watchmen universe? Because I don't think there could be. There's no phones.
Oh no, you're right.
Maybe they have something else. Maybe it's just like a Tamagotchi that can connect to a satellite. Like,
a Tamagotchi, yeah.
That's the greatest.
With an antenna.
Yeah, like let's give them some credit. Maybe they figured it out.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. So, but we all end up coming into, and we all end up having their moment, and that we come into Lady True, and the 7th Cavalry are there, and Keen is sitting there smug, and he steps into his little chamber. And here's my thing. We're going to go, I do want to talk in brief about Manhattan in the comics, because what was Keen honestly thinking that he would have the mental fortitude to put himself back together? Because I seem to recall that Manhattan put himself back together over the span of several weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's such a like...
Think about it at all. I think Keen had...
No.
Yeah, talk about the ego going first.
Oh, absolutely. It was so... It was the most egotistical, like... literally half-baked like plan, like they're sitting there in this thing, this intrinsic chamber or whatever, all just in chairs, wooden chairs, like in this church, just like, oh, this is normal, we'll just sit here, like nothing is, it was just the most like they did not think it through.
I guarantee you that almost every idea that they had to do this was fed to them by Lady True.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Make sure
there's no way they knew how to build all that. No way.
Wendy's been actually been stomping this all season. Like literally, like I think Lady True is kind of behind this, and Wendy was right. Literally, Lady True, and it was so cleverly crafted too. The way they did it, we're like, yeah, these idiots are idiots, and they're always going to do idiot shit. But she conflated them so that she could get to the means to do what she needed to do. So I found it great that they like wove that in. Because I was like, and I didn't even think about it until Angela was like, duh, stupid. Like, you see all this equipment, let you steal it.
She was making them. So this is my thing, was where did he come in? I think the interesting thing is that she was looking for Manhattan for a long time. She knew where he wasn't, and she figured he was on Europa, and she was going to look there. And then I'm assuming that White Knight happened, and that alerted her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
to what was going on, and maybe that's why she sent for Veidt at the time.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking too.
Because I'm guessing she should be able to, like, because she said his signature was really like specific. Mm-hmm. So once he used his power, she was probably like, "Oh, there he is."
Yeah.
Well, what I don't know is when she talked to Will, when she met up with Will,
yes,
to get confirmation, and that is never. Explained, is it?
I think she probably contacted him because she was going after, she knew that Cal was Dr. Manhattan. She wanted to find a way to get to Angela, so she probably tracked
right,
him.
Yeah.
And remember, she's running that place where everybody puts their DNA in.
Yeah.
She might have made that place, and she might have made the whole thing around why it had to exist just to get Angela's DNA so she could find someone who was related to her.
Supervillains are ridiculous, yeah.
Right, though? But, like, would this not be something that Lex Luthor would do? Like, Lady True is such a good supervillain. She's so over the top. And extra for no reason. Like, her hat. Guys, I want to wear the hat. Like, the hat that she was wearing, the little halo hat. I need it.
She's trying to show that she's an extra worldly being.
Yeah, it's literally a halo. Yeah.
Speaking of extraworldly beans or beans and beans that aren't done, I think we made it. Did somebody make a half baked joke? See, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this.
I think we've said half baked a lot in this episode in this recording, just because it, like, literally the 7K's plans were very half baked.
Yeah.
Then can we talk about how Keen literally came out of the cooker half baked?
That was like a souffle that just collapsed.
Just how Dr. Manhattan knew it was going to go down.
Yeah.
Oh no, you can't filter. You can't use atomic energy without filtering it.
Yeah.
And
just to point this out. Remember last week when we were talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we said that's how we wanted it to go down, and that was literally how it went down.
I got it kind of in more ways than one, because so Lady True tried to do this whole reading of the crimes thing about how the Cyclops, and trying to get the Cyclops for their, you know, for their crimes rightfully, and trying to do it and make it a big production, and it said a lot to me and I don't necessarily know if I understand enough about this to go into it. No, actually, no, you know what I do? It said a lot to me about Miss Crawford when she was just like, just fucking do it. Just do it. Just get it over with. And I don't respect people like that. I don't. I did respect her just being like, you know what? Don't, you know, just Indiana Jones it. We got that Indiana Jones moment. Just Indiana Jones it. Just kill us. And she was like, well, of course I am. And then they exploded. And I was like, I knew I predicted it. I said they were going to explode. And I got my explosion. I was very happy about that.
I loved that. Even though she had that moment of like, just fucking do it. Everyone else is like, what? No. No, I don't want to die. Which I thought was like a great balance of that scene. Because like, if they were all like, yeah, bet we're going to die, I would have been like, okay. It's not, I don't know, it would have taken away a little bit of satisfaction, but I love that for her. Like, that character just seemed like, she seemed like the mastermind almost behind that whole, not mastermind, but like, she felt like the woman behind the curtain. So I felt like that line was so appropriate for her. But like, I love the white blonde lady in the back going, no, what? Like, it just, she was my favorite. It's just like losing her shit.
Just all that like, you know, panicking and absolute panicking. And it just, again, it's something to be said about power and how, you know, people who abuse power tend to be the people who are, people who get power tend to get very scared very easily. And from what little I've observed of the world, no, from what I've observed of the world, when you have a lot of power and you get very scared very easy, you know, and then it's taken away from you and you're just like, you know, or you literally explode.
And I'm sorry. Yeah, I her scene that when she had the like facing death moment was kind of similar to Lady True's when she was like, when the thing was about to fall on her and she realized that she was about to die. It was very like the exact same moment.
Yes, this show had a lot of strong women, and I really appreciated how much. And it all comes back to, because it all comes back to Angela, and it all comes back to, you know, to Angela and to Lori and to Wade, because, you know, Manhattan's sitting there. Manhattan observes this, and this dude has literally just poofed into blobness, and all these people have just poofed, and he's just kind of sitting there meditating, and he's, you know, and rightfully, because he knows what's coming, and he's also strapped in this cage, and some of the lines, I wish I had the foresight to get some of those lines, because his whole...
Go ahead, which one do you want?
It's not even about the lines. It's just how he's one with everything and everywhere and in every single moment with her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so nice. If you're gonna die, at least send it. Living in the love.
I would love, that to me was...
This was my squee moment.
Just a big sigh. She's like, all right. And I think she felt that way too, is like, yep, we're not going to be able to stop it, but it was a good run.
Yeah. It like broke my heart, but I knew. I was like, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I thought that was a really... Because I've just watched Crisis, it reminded me of when, I don't know if everyone's watched Crisis, I'm sorry.
Just spoiler, it's fine.
Flash 90 does die, and the Flash portion of the Crisis episode, and they enter, when he's running and he disappears, they actually intercut some original footage from the show with Tina and him talking, and I was like, both scenes... Very similar, like the intercutting and the playing, just just cliche garbage, and I fall for it every time, guys. I cry, tugging at the heartstrings. I was like, oh, these are my heroes. Like it was so just expertly done. I mean, I don't even know if it was expertly done because I'm just a sucker for it, but like it was just really good and beautiful and yeah.
It's a beautiful, I just really like the idea, for me, the idea of love is to truly, and I say this as somebody who's only been in brief relationships, but for me, the idea of love is to truly be with someone in every single moment in your mind. And so now I'm getting a little misty-eyed about that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's when you, from my experience, it's when you feel like it's easier to be with them than to not be with them. And yeah, that
is so true. Holy shit. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, people are like, why do you do that? That was like the question. Like, why did Angela keep doing this if she knew that? Like, we had that question. But like, that's like the human fighting spirit. Like, some, like, if you know that this is what it is, love is so, and I guess this is like the silly story of love. And we always talk about the power of love. But like, it's like, that's like, that's literally what it is, you know? Like, I'm getting emotional. But like, it's so powerful, right? Like, they both knew it was going to end in tragedy. And they wanted that time together anyway.
And that's the stronger part. It's like, yes, they were, and this is why now I go back to, and like, yes, I understand now what we're talking about at the beginning is that she's not saving the day, but she's doing the hardest thing, which is being there for Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. He says, I don't want to be alone when I die. That hit me.
That's like, yeah. When, like, it, I don't know if they were making that parallel, but people with chronic illness, like, I watched my great-grandma, Delia, which, and a lot of people aren't close with their great-grandmas, but Puerto Rican families, we marry young, get, like, have kids young, so, like, I got to have the privilege of being close to that great-grandma, Delia, so having, she got diagnosed with two cancers, so having her whole family by her side, and, you know, all her loved ones, it's so kind of, like, seeing your loved one next to them, you, that's kind of what you do, you just are there for them, so I kind of got that parallel, too, a little bit. So, whew, it's beautiful, but yeah.
Wonderful. What an absolutely powerful, obviously this show has inspired so many emotions in so many people. And it's just, it's great to discuss. And as we step into those last moments of Manhattan, and as we step into Lady True, who is seemingly working to achieve her destiny, we jump to Manhattan, who is sitting there in those final moments, and he teleports Wade, Lori, and excuse me, sorry, I just burped. We celebrate Wade, Lori, and Ozymandias into. He's truly in, at least to me, in Ozymandias' role, because he's actually doing something decent. And he goes, so they all end up there, and I feel so bad for Wade because Wade's just like, what the hell is going on?
It makes it real for him, though, right? Yeah, like, he saw the video, so but yeah. Now this is really real. I mean, he's there with Vite, and I was so impressed by him in that, like, Rorschach, you know, went off, blah, 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 but Wade is very calm and collected. Oh, okay, all right, so it's true, and those are the squids, and this is how you did it, and then he's just biding his time until he can take him in.
Yeah,
but it was just very, I was very impressed that he didn't lose his cool and go ballistic, and he helped, and like, in one hand, it's like he did kind of almost become Vite in the end, because he had to choose to, you know, to sacrifice the however many blocks worth of people to get at Lady True. It's not quite the same scope, but he did that, and he didn't flinch.
Yeah, I think that was a, oh, sorry, go ahead, Tony.
I was gonna say, like, he really took it in stride, almost, like he was, okay, now you gotta turn the temperature down to 22 or whatever, I don't remember, but it may have been 22, and he was like, oh,
it was 22
okay.
degrees, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, he just walked over and did it, and that was such a, like, it's almost like a superhero thing, like, you just deal with, like, the weird stuff when it happens like that.
But no argument, no. Like, last time there was a huge discussion, of course it was over, and that's one thing I wanted to point out, too, is Vite had that line in the original, it's like, you know, what do you think I am, a Republic serial villain? And I kind of feel like the way that True was kind of advertising what she did before she did it was very Republic serial villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it just so we can all remind ourselves, interior, Vite's, interior Karnak, Vite stares at Wade and says, we're going to use these baby squids as a Gatling gun. Mm-hmm. And then he says to Angela, if you have anyone that you care about, you better take care of calling them quick. And Angela calls
Lori.
Lori.
Wait, Lori.
Yeah.
And she uses the phone booth.
I know. OT3 vibes, guys.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's OTP now.
But... I know. Okay. Listen. Oh my God. Okay. So the Gatling gun reference, and then that with the like the shooting and the holes in people's hands reminded me of that gross scene where they were running and then the 7K were using that giant wasn't that a Gatling gun to shoot through the field of cows or whatever? That was like the gross thing that I was reminded of, and like all those people dropping like flies. I was like, oh, this is so gross. Like, but it was the Wade thing. I definitely get where you guys are coming from, and I feel like I honestly want to explore him some more, because I feel like finding out that like the thing that was causing him literal like post-traumatic stress, anxiety, all of this, like, what was it? Extra dimensional anxiety disorder or whatever. Not whatever, a valid thing within this universe, was literally like caused by a hoax. Like, I can't imagine how that could break a person, or maybe not. We never really see that. So like, I don't know if that informs his decision to be like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go with it. So I can just arrest him later. Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of holes to fill in, and he's such a fascinating character. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
So the question is, so if you look at like Martian Manhunter, and Martian Manhunter's thing was always that he's afraid of fire, right? So it's like he's super powerful beyond belief, but he's got a very mundane fear that keeps him grounded. And I know Wade's not superpowers or anything, but has this thing that's been holding him back his whole life. Like, when they took away Martian Manhunter's fear of fire, he kind of, you know, ultimate power corrupts, he kind of became dangerous. I'm wondering, is this something that, like, he's going to go through a phase where he has to come back to being himself again, because now he's living in a world... I mean, this would be a good season two thing. Is this, like, how does Wade adjust? Does he continue being a cop? Does he do something else? What changes?
There's that line that comes later in the episode that I think that you just put it together for me, Wendy, that applies to both Wade and to Angela and to Hood of Justice and to large chunks of the police force that were directly involved in this. But we shall come to that, because Beyond has locked herself in the little tube, and the squids are coming down, and Lady True just kind of ends up getting shot. That hand scene really kind of was like, what?
And it was Stigmata. I think it was supposed to be Stigmata.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, but even the halo, I'm going to get back to this beautiful halo crown, because in traditional, I don't know what kind of art it is. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. Listed, like, the angels are depicted in, like,
yeah, I almost want to say Baroque, but I don't know.
With the halo, literally her hat looked just like that. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I know what she's evoking there. And the fact that she's wearing all white, which is in American culture, is very, it's like angelic. Yeah, it's like angelic and like pure. And but in in Japanese culture, and I believe someone pointed out in Vietnamese culture that and other Korean cultures, I think, that this is a color, white is a color of mourning. So I think that that's an interesting juxtaposition of like all of that. But yeah, I definitely think I agree with Wendy. The it was Stigmata for sure. It was gross as hell. And very effective when she lifted her hand up. Yeah. I was like,
What a great piece of special effects. I'm really glad that you brought up the idea behind mourning, though. And that's the cool thing about, you know, and that's what Watchmen did so well, is that it combined different pieces so that different things would have different meanings and people could come together and discuss it. That, I think, was what that's what I want to see in a season two, is I want to see more people discussing it, because you have Lady True gets the egg dropped on her just after she drains Manhattan's power. And so Cal and Manhattan, we shed a tear.
Hi, Peeboo.
For the Titan of the comic, we shed a tear for, as my stepdad said when I first read the comic, Superman that didn't give a shit. It turned out he did. in a big way, and he was moved to do so by these characters, by Angela especially. And I think that, you know, just in honor of that, however brief, I want to give the guy a moment of silence. Just a brief one. Okay, guys?
All right, that's all he gets, because now I'm thinking about Doomsday Clock.
No, we don't talk about Doomsday Clock here.
That was good.
Did I finish yet?
I want to give props to Yawa. Like, he portrayed John, Cal, Manhattan so well. And my God, that man has a body. Not to objectify, but we love to objectify. I'm sorry, but he looks so good. Oh yeah, you're right, Tony. The right word, appreciate. I do appreciate a talented man who also plays Black Manta. We got to appreciate him. Shout out to him. So yeah.
I forgot he plays Black Manta. Oh
yeah, David Hyde. Shout out to the God.
He was so good in that. Oh dude, Aquaman's probably, after Wonder Woman, Aquaman's probably my favorite DCEU movie. So I'm really excited to find this out now, guys, because he's just a DC.
No, so Watchmen was just like plucking people from left and right. Jeremy Irons, Alfred Pennyworth, little Darla Dudley from Shazam. Like they were just like, okay, let's put everyone in. I loved it so much. I love it, love it, love it. Keep them paid because they're talented.
I feel like DC has a habit of doing that though. Like, you got Mirror Master's daughter playing Laurel. You got
they are such loyalists to their people. Like, I love that though. They're like, but we love you. Can you play 16 more characters? Like, okay. Anyway, sorry. Keep going.
No, we need. I'm sitting over here naturally because I'm team Marvel. I'm like, how can we ensnare them and drag them over to the dark side of the force? But no,
I like Marvel. I'm sorry, y'all already got me. I didn't expect Kumail to be that hot. No, I'm sorry. Dinesh from Silicon Valley is not supposed to be hot, and they revealed this. He's gorgeous. I know he really went through a lot to get that body for Eternals movie, but whoo. Snack. I appreciate it.
Deviating from Watchmen for 2 seconds, you guys, because yes, that was the thing. He admitted that, and I love him for this. He admitted that the only reason why he was able to do it was because he spent a year working with the best trainers, the best nutritionists. And I think we can all appreciate that. And you know, a lot of the characters in Watchmen had the same, you know, the same blessing.
Literally, Yawa talked about that on an interview he just did. He literally said he like basically had to change his diet so that he could look like
correct.
That
well not correct but as expected, I guess.
Yeah, right, exactly.
and I think that, you know, we got to give a shout out to the actors, but at the same time we also got to recognize that these are people who should be able to look as that however they want, but still like my God. I'm not ready for Brian Tyree Henry. I'm not ready for him. Because anyway. And he's playing, I heard, well, this is not the Eternals podcast. We don't, you know, we're not, there's plenty of other Marvel podcasts. We'll find some to recommend to you. But we are talking about Watchmen, and we are talking about the Dreamland Theater and Hooded Justice's line about how, and his whole discussion with Angela about how all the kids came in and how... Okay, so this is the part, everybody, where I cried. I lost it. And I lost it because, as a fan, sometimes you put, like, masks on. And you put masks on as a kid when you're growing up. And for Will Reeves, and he talked, and it ties back into fandom. And he even admits that it ties back into fandom in its own way, because he says, he tells Angela his mother sat right there, was playing the piano, and he's watching the movie, and he put on this mask of the Black Sheriff, and he wanted to be this character, and then life came at him, and it was painful. And, you know, it's really hard to take that off and to try and be yourself. It's really fucking hard. And to have him say that wounds need air and you can't have a mask to do that just really it really fucking hit me because I spent a lot of time pretending and, you know, role playing and doing all the random stuff, and I like it, but at the same time I was never really happy. And it's nice to see somebody write about something like that, and I'm not going to apologize for crying because it was very healing. That's only one way even that it could be interpreted. Like, it's no accident. I'm sorry. It's no accident to me that Angela isn't wearing her mask anymore by the end of the episode, and neither is Waitley. That's no accident. And I just... Will Reeves letting go and realizing that he has a right to be a person and to be angry and to have feelings that are his and that don't belong in it, like don't belong to someone else, just meant a lot. That's all I got.
It's a great take. Great take.
Yes. Yes.
Do we see the mask as hiding, and then it's kind of like? Because you did say it was more about fear than
that, because I didn't want anything bad to happen, and it felt really like one of those moments where you think it's going to be sweet, but then something bad happens. So I was really like, oh my gosh, what's about to happen? And so, so I was kind of caught up in that, and I did not get to finish rewatching it because a bug attacked me in my room. But, I like feel like on a rewatch I'll be able to say, okay, this is a really, really touching scene.
The first time I went through it, I was like, he's telling her to drop her vengeance, but then I thought that was hypocritical because he just got his vengeance. But I think now looking at it, I think it's more like if you're gonna take your vengeance, take it with your full face, take it head on, don't hide. But I don't know. That's open for interpretation.
I think that, like, I think Carolyn's point is something that I think that the season has really talked about is I think he was saying a little bit, at least I took it to the point where he's saying that, like, the mask, I wore the mask because of shit that happened to me, but also as a result of generational trauma. Like, the entire season's been, like, the legacy that parents and grandparents have been passing on to their kids, and the kids keep wearing masks and they keep making the same mistakes and they keep doing the same things, and this cycle keeps continuing because the only hero that didn't wear a mask was Manhattan. He was all powerful, he didn't need to wear a mask. But was he right either? No, we don't, that's up for interpretation. So the masks and hiding behind masks, I don't know if I like the idea of a hiding behind mask. I do think that masks allow you to be something that you feel like you can't be when you're just you, which can be literally a bad and good thing. We've seen the use of that in both the show and in real life. But I do think that was important for him to tell her that holding on to that, and because he tried to heal under a mask and look what he lost, you know, he lost everything.
That's when you bring that up, that's part of the reason why, and like, you know, we're being honest on this show, you guys, we are bearing it, and it's causing us pain, it's causing us a lot of pain, mm-hmm. but it also causes you healing. So I'll own that part of the reason why I got kicked out of the house when I ended up homeless was because my mom said I was spending too much time role-playing on the internet and on the computers and things. And I'll own that. But I was trying to pretend to be something else. So in a way, it is hiding. In a way, it's being very afraid. But you don't know. No human being wants to admit that they're afraid. Because when you're afraid, and we're a very scared species, but when you're afraid, you could be hurt. So we pretend that we're something that we're not. And ultimately, it ends up hurting you. And that's all I got on that. Because I think everybody's right. But you really, to make ourselves stronger, we put on masks. And sometimes it makes us cruel. I said that earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it makes us stronger people. But you... The whole message to me was that you, the strongest person, the moment you achieve true godlike potential, not to get blasphemous and not to get any or anything like that, but the moment that you achieve true power is when you're yourself.
I also want to add on, Carolyn, because I think your point was perfect, almost like literally almost flawless. I think mask what you empowers you to be something that you're not, but I also think that sometimes it also empowers you to be something that you are, that you're just afraid to show everyone. So it may not be something that you're not. It could just be something, you know, it's who you are too, but it's hard to share it, you know? So I think that your point is, your point's valid. Like, I think that that's, but also I think like people do cling, really need like that, you know, that identity. And so I think that you needed that at that time, and there's nothing wrong with that or shameful. And everyone has that. Everyone has had that, you know what I mean? So I think that you're flawless.
Thank you.
But I like, one of the points I want to make sure that we don't overlook is the parallels between Beyond, the real original Beyond, who was quoting Lady True, which we've said earlier this season.
Oh, yeah.
And she is exactly the story of Pirate Jenny. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's kind of like you guys all overlooked me while I'm scrubbing the floors.
Saved her at the end. You're right. Ah.
And then her ship comes in and revenge, and the daughter was the revenge, but it didn't quite come. Yes.
So like Pirate Jenny like helped her out at the end. Like I think that was probably a parallel that they wanted to make. Yeah. I want to talk about Beyond more. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I really want to talk about Beyond a lot more, because
poor kid.
That is one of the most, I think, out of this entire show, is one of the most batshit, bonkers, wildest, most interesting characters that the show has created. Like, it's a mom daughter person. She's close to living as much as Manhattan is, like living literally simultaneously in two timelines. That's wild.
Because she has the memories, but they're not. That's the thing. So if there was to be a second season, I would like to, first of all, I think you just put that idea in my head that I want her to now be adopted by Pirate Jenny.
Yes.
I want it to be about figuring out who she actually, because she's a real Pirate Jenny, figuring out who she actually is and trying to come into her own. I would love her to be friends with Topher, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yes, I would support a season two. And I can talk about this as a Damon Lindelof fan, and I will always talk about Leftovers, that The Leftovers season one was originally supposed to, I believe it was originally written as a bottle season, and they gave it another season, and it was relocated and with a little small time jump, and Regina King and her family were introduced in the second season. So I'm just saying, there's potential here that it could happen, that we could get a cool exploration of the characters that have been introduced as a third generation. This would be essentially the third generation of Watchmen, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would be so interested and deeply interested in exploring Topher and Beyond, but especially Beyond, because Beyond's so interesting.
Do we
want to be vaguely pessimistic and say that Beyond as a 13-year-old girl is not going to be friends with a 10-year-old boy?
Oh, no. I wasn't saying they're going to be friends.
Yeah. Is he not 12? I thought he was 12. I'm sorry. I don't know how I got that.
I thought he was like 10 or 11.
No, I don't think he's 10. Young. I think he's at least in middle. I thought he was in middle school. He seems like he's in middle school, like a 12-year-old.
Guys are smaller than girls at that age.
True. So, I mean, but I feel like they said like 6th grade or 5th grade or something.
Really?
But I don't know. I might be forgetting what class.
I think fifth grade is, I want to say that's 11. And,
yeah, that's 10, 11. Yeah,
yeah, my kids are 6 and they're kindergarten.
6th grade.
Maybe kids' ages. anyway, yeah, so well. I think that we, I have no idea. I literally will look at a high schooler and be like, he's 10. Like, I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
So then, okay, yeah, so we have the conversation with grandpa and his granddaughter. I loved the nativity scene of the kids sleeping on the stage. Oh, that was such a nativity scene. Guys, come on. Right? Like the baby, like I love the show. I'm sorry. Everything is so, every visual is so good. And like, it makes me think like, anyway. So, and then also, I also made a note that the raining frozen baby squids actually reminded me of the callback, the watchtower art, as a someone who was raised as a Jehovah's Witness, and they called it back, like they actually, you know, featured it as Wade's upbringing. There's actually artwork that I've seen in Watchtower when I was a kid that actually had the exact same kind of imagery, but it was fire. So it was actually really weird seeing that when I was like originally watching. I was like, man, it looks like some of the artwork I've seen, like. Anyway, so it was like a religiously
plague, right?
Yeah,
it's frogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the fiery hail. So, did we talk about that quote that he restated from the first, from the end of the book, after? So Ozymandias is talking to the newspaper guy. He's like, you know, you look like Adrian Veidt, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's another Superman reference, I think, where in a way, like, that's how people will react to Clark Kent. They'd be like, you look kind of like Superman, but like, well, he is Superman, but they're not thinking he's Superman. Sorry.
But the quote he gives him about the end of the world is like literally what he says right after he does the squid thing in the comic.
Really? I can't remember. Sorry, I can't remember what he said.
I can, so I've got the panel. We'll post it on the blog. If anybody's interested, that's all there is. There's no deep meaning to it. I just say the quote. Except I think on the one hand, I think when he originally stated it, it was about how there was going to be a utopia, and now it's about how the world is going to end.
See, and then we tie into, you know, is Angela takes the kids home and she gets grandpa home, but we're talking
I want to talk about that scene where they're walking. I the way she looks back at him, I was certain he was about to die like June did, like he was just gonna collapse or something. It felt really similar, really parallel. I mean, I'm glad he did. But
you take that thought and you put that thought in the trash can. No, that thought is not happening. I'm sorry. I just that's very smart, and that would have been devastating, but that would have been a beautiful moment. Like, holy crap, that would have been a beautiful moment. Because they did kind of, I love June, and they did kind of sort of slide her aside, and I'm kind of like, okay, well, they could have been together. It could have been grandma too, and. Anyway,
I am glad that didn't happen, because she's been trying so hard for her family for so long. I know not everything has to have a happy ending, but like, it was just nice to see. Even though her grandpa is, I wouldn't say he's a good guy. He's shady. He's a shady dude. But I also appreciate that she has like this, still has some semblance of a family left after losing her husband and losing so much. But I also loved that moment. We've been talking about Topher and her being, you know, him being her Robin to her Batman, and him seeing her costume. And like, it was so cool, like, to see that moment when he like was like, oh, you're a superhero. Like, it was just like, and also, yes, it was very similar to, I guess, paralleling when Will's son would see him dress up as Hood of Justice. But I think this was more of a positive, I guess, trying to be in a more positive spin, where I was like, oh, mom's like that, you know? But I don't know. I thought it was cute.
It's adorable. No, it's adorable. And it's a sign of the new world, too, because we're heading into the final scene that we have so far with Wade, Lori, and Veidt. And Veidt has refixed the owl ship, and Lori has her very gentle smile and says, you know, oh, Archie, because it's Archie. And Veidt says to Wade, he says, you know, I think the police department stole or using Draper's design, so you can fly one of those. And he's like, yes, sir, I can. And then she, you know, it just hit me. Lori is like, not a good, well, no, like, there's a stereotype of the type of person that the comedian should be in comics, where it's like, you know, the dashing G-man, whatever, and he was a psychopath. But then Lori comes in, and Lori's basically filling that stereotype. She's just doing it as a woman. And mm-hmm. I like that. Like, she's definitely put in on the air of, I'm not going to take any shit from you. And that's something her mom did and something that her dad did. And she kind of wraps it all together. She's like, no, you know, we're fixing this. We're righting this wrong. And what she says that sticks with me in that is she says, people keep saying that the world's going to end. And it's not. And that, to me, is... That's a theme that's been going on a lot lately. Everybody's been talking about how everything's going to end if things don't go a certain way or if things change. And I'm sorry I keep pontificating, you guys. I really am.
No, it's good. I like it.
There's a podcast Radiolab did a while back called Apocalyptica, I think. I'll give you the link. And I think the interesting thing is, it seems like the world hasn't ended, but it has ended several times, just not for us yet. And that's an interesting thing to think about. So I think it's not as, you know, yeah, just because it didn't end doesn't mean it couldn't have ended. But at the same time, you can't live your life in fear. And I do think it's been 35 years. I don't know that finding out about the squid is going to be as impactful as it would have been in 1985.
And that's a solid guess. And that's a solid point and a solid theory and a solid idea. And for me, I agree truthfully, but for me, I think that, I don't know, the whole thing that stuck with me about that is, no matter how bad you think things are going to be, humanity's too dumb to die out.
Like,
well, no.
We're making a great case for it. Well, we're terraforming our Earth currently to be inhabitable for all human life. That's probably the best way to do it.
Even then, like, I have, and we've all been down at the bottom of the barrel, and we can all choose to be optimist or pessimist, but as a nihilist, I just immediately, I do think of the worst, but then I turn into an optimist, and I'm like, you know, even if we end up living underground and turning into mole people because we can't see the sun because there's just rays and rays of pollution and poison up there, we'll still be mole people. I mean, we'll still be here. We'll just be mole.
It's depressing.
I know, but it's like, I had absolute faith in things until it actually happens. Like, until, you know, you always think, oh, my dad will always be there. And then one day, he's just not there. Or you think, I'm going to, you know, every time I drive in the car, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of scared to drive today. And you get where you're going, and you're like, for years and years and years, and you're like, oh, I shouldn't be worried about getting in the car. And then one day somebody veers out of traffic and smacks into your car, and, you know, you're laid up for a year. And it's just, it happens. We don't like to think it happens because there's another thing. So I'm not saying that she didn't have a valid point in the show, is that you got to do the right choice. You can't do the choice that's safe. But at the same time, the world could have, Lady Chu could have become Dr. Manhattan. You know, it could very well, if Veidt hadn't dropped the squid, she would have become Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. And it's, but you know what? Again, I just want to remind everyone, no matter what happens, we could always survive as mole people.
Hopefully.
Yeah, just stay away from the Fantastic Four.
No! I want to be a mole! But in any case, I am so...
We're about to get to the kitchen. The eggs, she realized.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So Wendy has been asking all season what the gift was. I think the gift was egg.
Oh, an egg timer. It was definitely the gift you give her. Maybe it was the golden egg, the Fabergé egg. There we go.
It was an egg the whole time. But yeah, I feel like that was, I feel like that was just that whole moment when she realized and everything, and then she was walking to the pool, and then there was a review I read that said, like, she look like you contemplated actually smashing the egg. But I don't know if I got that from that moment. But she, nonetheless, she drank it. And then we get to see, which is a direct parallel of when he dropped, when she put the egg in his beer and he drank the beer and the egg in it. I saw a parallel gift set where it literally called back to when he was standing on the pool and she was attempting to stand on the pool. And he was like, she's like, get the fuck up off the pool. And he was like, you need to see me on the pool. And she's like, why? And he's like, for later, you know, and he realized why, because she was going to attempt to see if she could do it. And I know that this was, I know Damon said this is like the ambiguous ending, but to me, this is not ambiguous. She literally, like, the show laid it out. Homegirl has at least a portion of his power, if not something that is going to change her. I don't think she has all of his power, because I don't even know how you could transport his power like that. He explained it, I guess, so that's basically how it happens. But at the end of the day, I think that she got something of his powers. And I'm...
Vanessa, what if I could prove it to you? What if I could prove it?
Prove it.
Before you prove it, I want to give a logic explanation.
Okay, go ahead.
The meta logic explanation. They're not going to show her... Okay, first off, Manhattan is smart and he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
So if he says, I can put my powers into an egg and if you consume them, you theoretically you'd get some powers of mine. And then she consumes the egg. She has the powers.
Right.
But also, I don't think that was the point of the scene. Necessarily, not whether or not she has powers, like, but her decision making on consenting to getting the powers was the purpose. But you can go on and prove it.
That's wild. Okay,
it's also communion, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we talked about this before as well. Yeah, eating the body of the I thought that was actually my prediction. The last episode we recorded was that this is what the 7K was going to do to him. That was not what happened. But the wine was actually, grossly, maybe his gross soup, keen soup, that kind of represented the blood. But like, yeah, she consumed the body.
And so she has risen. She has risen indeed. And now I will prove it, because the song that plays over the trailer is essentially the whole fucking series. And that song is...
I am the angry man.
I am the walrus. Listen to the lyrics. Mm-hmm. Listen to the lyrics. Okay. I am he, as you are me, and we are all together. See how they run like pigs from a gun. See how they fly. I'm crying. Sitting on a cornflake, waiting for the van to come. It's the whole damn series. Corporation t-shirt, stupid bloody Tuesday, man, you've been a naughty boy, you let your face grow long. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus. Goo goo gajube. Mr. City, policeman sitting, pretty little policemen sitting in a row. See how they fly, like Lucy in the sky. See how they run, I'm crying. Yellow matter custard, dripping from a dead dog's eye, crab locker fishwife, pornographic priestess, boy, you've been a naughty girl, you let your knickers down, I am the Eggman, they are the Eggman, I am the walrus, goo goo gajube. He wrote all of Watchmen based on a Beatles song. Every single line.
Can you get sued for that? Theoretically.
It's not literal enough, but like, if see pretty little policeman sitting on a row, that's all the cops. Okay, see how they fly like Lucy in the sky, that's Archie and Archie Jr. sitting up there. Yellow matter custard dripping from a dead dog's eye, like, even if it's just very loosely inspired, it is the all of the lyrics are, they're so bizarre, but he managed to blend them all into Watchmen. And it literally proves that she gets his powers, because the show ends on with such a very specific song, and it starts with "I am the Eggman." Boom.
Hey.
Boom.
Boom. Mic drop. I win.
And I also love that the whole proving of the powers, like, is literally one of the most famous things that Jesus Christ could do.
Yes.
Walk on water. And we also know that Jesus is black. Sorry, just had to throw that out there.
No, it's true. Jesus is black. Jesus is black, and in this case, you got the Jesus is the demigod is a black woman, and I thought that
God is a woman. Sorry.
No, you're not. This is not the first time I've seen that joke, but it's true. It's literally true in this universe, and it's so. Oh my god! And then even when you factor that Topher has kind of a Jesus haircut.
Yeah, we talked about that too. This is the best thing that they've done is, and Damon Lindelof has always done, is integrate theological and religious text and metaphors and allegories within his shows. He's always done that. And I've always appreciated him for that. So this is my favorite example of that. And when the end credit scene happened, I was like, oh, I don't want it to end. But it was so, if I could say it was a near perfect season of television, divested from the comics, I would say it was a near perfect season of television. Like, I would say, like, we're in the post golden age of television. We're in the golden age of superhero TV. This is the prime example of it. Watchmen, Doom Patrol, Legion. These are shows that push the genre further. Punch, boom, pow, that has been prevailing for the last 30, 40, 50 years since the first Batman 66 came out or whatever. This show, as well as the other two I named, because I got to shout out Doom Patrol and Legion, got to shout out to Marvel, or Fox, I guess, make that one. But still, these are shows that we're telling superhero stories, but we're also pushing beyond that. We're not just saying superheroes are good. We're exploring why. What's the behind? What's the story? We have a series that is literally saying that the first superhero, the first vigilante ever, was a black man who was nearly lynched by his fellow police officers. That is the framing that Damon Lindelof has given us for Watchmen. I think that's fucking brilliant. And I don't know how, I love to hear how you guys feel about it, but Watchmen to me is a series, is a beautiful successor to the original comics.
I agree. I think that the ending, and admittedly, I am drawing from the Lindelof interview as far as my wording for this, but when he said that the ending of the comic definitely ended on an ambiguous note with them deciding whether or not to publish Rorschach's journal, the ending of deciding whether or not Angela picks up the power mantle is definitely perfect. And I think that, we spend most of our time these days in pop culture, and we consume nothing but pop culture. And it's a part of all of our lives because, as we discussed with masks, human beings need this. It helps us find the it helps us to find the boundaries of our reality. It helps us to find the place in our world. And we need to be challenged. And in order to be challenged, to make changes in the real world. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, as much as we love this, I'm just going to deliver a hard truth here. As much as we love this show, and I really fucking do, it's not real.
No.
And but the change that could be made by people who are inspired by it is very real. And that to me is exactly what Moore wanted with the book. I mean, not necessarily wanted, but maybe like the unintended consequence that he sort of accepted. But that's what good art should do. Good art can't just be, I'm going to collect 50 Funkos. I'm going to get me a Sister Night Funko. Mm-hmm. Sorry guys. I'm staring at my phone. But I'm going to get me a Sister Night Funko, and I'm going to get me a Wade Funko. It can't just be that. It has to make you ask questions. It has to make you uncomfortable. You think. And Watchmen did exactly that on so many levels. And I'm very, very grateful to Damon and to Regina King and to all of the writers and to HBO for putting it together, especially after you fucked us all over with Game of Thrones Season 8.
Preach!
I almost want to say, good on HBO for approving it, but it's also, they had to know people were going to watch it. I mean, it's Watchmen. It's,
yeah, absolutely.
And HBO is owned by Warner Brothers, I think.
HBO may be owned by Warner Brothers, but the decision to take Watchmen and to turn it into such a powerful piece of art.
Yeah, they gave it to the right person.
I will say that WB, DC, for all of the faults they have done, for all the things they have fucked up, I will say that they have made this one Black / Puerto Rican woman feel so much more included with the inclusion of making historically white characters people of color. In live action, not just in comics and not just in animation, but in live action. And I will say that Marvel has been struggling to do that, has yet to do that. And that's the one thing that I will say DC has, and WB, I will always give props to them, that they have consistently put and will continue to put people of color and Black people's stories and people and keep putting them behind the scenes and putting them in writing. And I will always appreciate that. And Watchmen is the kind of is the result of that. Like, they started with this, I don't know if they started with it, but it got my attention all those years back when they casted Black Candace Patton as white Iris West. And they've continued to do that over the years, is to keep making me as a Black woman feel more loyal and included, even as I keep getting frustrated with the decisions that they make sometimes. And Tony knows, I know she knows, but I want to say that I want to really especially give them a shout out for this, because this show really is so good. So yeah.
See, of the things I've ever been frustrated, Candace Patton was a perfect choice.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's so good. Like, her, and like, it just it opened the floodgates, I think, to even like Disney casting a Black Ariel. We have just like a really good, I think, energy right now in certain parts of entertainment, and I think Watchmen is the child of that. So when I say we're in the golden age of superhero TV, I think that's I feel like I'm not even being over exaggerative, and I know I do exaggerate a lot.
No, you're not, and it's good for people who have seen, you know, it's good for people with power, and who even if you don't see it, power is like light bulbs. I mean, you don't really need to touch light to know that it's there. You just kind of need to see it, and you know, and you should know that it exists. And so I was profoundly challenged by Watchmen, and I'm not going to lie, it was uncomfortable, and I will own that discomfort, and I will appreciate the notion, because if you don't go into something like this wanting to be challenged, then you should want to be challenged. There's so much, life is so much.
You mean the show or the book?
Both.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, the book, if you had read the book you were in the series, you knew you were going to be challenged.
Yes, that's why I was so mad. All four of us were so mad. We were so mad because fanboys before the show were like, no, this isn't going to be like the comics at all. When we were all like, this is what the literal thing was. Are you kidding me? Like, Alan Moore was doing this back in before most white men were doing it. Are you kidding?
Yeah, you have to go, if you're not being challenged, are you really living? And that was the whole point. That was the whole fucking point of Veidt's experience, as well as Manhattan's. Veidt lived in a world where everything went his way, and everyone was subservient to him, and he was fucking miserable. So I'm taking a page out of that, and I'm going to be like, you know, no, this challenged me. I'm very pleased with it. I came to really, you know, I was rooting for these characters from the get-go, but you can't belittle the fact that, you know, this is a Black show. And, like, it's been a real, Tony and Vanessa and Wendy, it has been a profound privilege and something I am not going to forget, especially because I'm going to hold out hope for season 2. I'm sorry.
Me too.
I'm just going to live it.
Honestly, I would love one. I can't even lie.
So the band will remain together, although we won't be doing this every week.
Do we want to do predictions?
Yeah, let's do predictions. Let's do
Tony,
it.
You got predictions, Tony?
Yeah. Regarding what? I don't know.
I know Wendy's got a list.
Yes,
so,
Tony,
okay,
wait, they work for it.
I know. I want to make sure we get, because I know Wendy's got a list. So I want to make sure if anyone else has got predictions, because she's got an extensive list and I want to hear her. I actually don't have any predictions aside from obviously, like, the kind of, like, if we do get a second season, just if it's with the same characters, because I don't even think if we do get a second season, I don't think it'll be the exact same cast and crews we have now, or cast as we have now. But if we do get the same thing, I feel like it'll be a time jump, and yeah, we'll get Angela kind of adjusting to her powers, raising her kids, and like dealing with her dad, or her grandpa's shit, if he's still alive by that point. Well, I don't know. I honestly have not even thought about like that, but that's really what I would think for a season two, but also more beyond. So anyway.
Yes, she needs to be almost a central character, I think, because
yeah, more exploration into the Vietnamese Americans, right? Like, that was something that was amiss, which Carolyn called out for sure.
100%.
Yeah, because I mean, really, not only that, but also like, how do you live knowing that were like groomed to be somebody else? Mm-hmm. Anyway, like it's. Because, I mean, like, okay, she has the same DNA as her mother's mother. But, I mean, people who have identical twins as Wendy probably know, like, having identical twin doesn't make you the same person. You don't, DNA is not the person. So, mm-hmm. So, I mean, but she's still, like, with the memories and everything. Like, she was really groomed to be this other woman. So she's like, how do I be myself? Am I, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's going to be some existentialism. Am I even real? Do I have a proper soul, et cetera, that kind of stuff. And I mean, especially like, and then she wonders, because I was raised by this woman, will I be like her? Will I be a megalomaniac? Was she mm-hmm. right? Like, she got a lot of stuff going on with her.
That, that's a Tony. Is that a Connor Kent parallel, maybe?
Oh, a bit.
I was stuck on SW6 Legion, but Connor Kent is pretty accurate.
Okay.
Well, SW6, that ended up being like actual time travel, right?
So well, they actually were the same person. They were just made different. I mean, that's true. It's like, even if you are the same person, because different choices were made, they still were different people. Very different mm-hmm. people. It was interesting.
Yeah.
God, I love you nerds so much. I literally can say one thing and then you both are just like off on a tangent. I'm like, yes.
And that's our least superheroes reference. Through.
Yeah.
You gotta get on these two. Really,
the only thing I would want in any season of any superhero show, but especially in Watchmen, since they've proven that they can handle this as opposed to a show like, say, Supergirl. I want to...
Don't get Wendy started.
I'm quiet. What do I think? I think you guys know exactly what I'm going to ask for. I want a trans character or a non-binary mm-hmm. character. I would fucking love a non-binary character.
Like Supergirl has treated Nia well.
Yeah, Nia. She's a good character.
The problems with her are trans, like, related to the writing of like her powers and stuff like that.
Yeah, hers. Yeah, agreed. Her. The literal issue with Nia is her power. That's it. Her as a character is adorable. She's great. She's fun. I actually love, and especially in the last season when she was introduced to Kara and mentoring her. And I loved the way her coming out story and how she talked about being an alien and also her trans identity specifically being it was very important. However, a show like the CW can't carry that weight and do the story, the character as much justice as a show like, or a service like HBO, or maybe, I don't know, any other show. But like,
I mean, that's it. You want more. You don't want her to be comic relief. You want her to have serious plot lines. And she's doing, and I think that Nicole Maines is aware of the mm-hmm. shortcomings of the role, but I mean, it is still progressive for what it is.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was thinking a lot about this today after reading that stupid article about little boys and going, okay, did you talk to any trans masculine people? Did you talk to any non-binary mm-hmm. people? Because the only people who acknowledge that non-binary people exist are women. So yeah. I just really want, I don't care who it looks like. Oh, if Damon, if you're listening, you could do me a solid and you could cast India Moore as a superhero.
Yeah. Oh my God. I would love that.
Can also think of several, since Spider-Man kind of made Spider-Man Homecoming, we love Spider-Man, they cast a trans masculine character who did not have any lines. So you could also pick him up. That would be great. You get India Moore, you get him, and you get the entire cast to pose, and you do something with that, and that would be amazing. I would love that.
that dude that's on Titans that I follow on Twitter.
Chellaman, the most one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life. Chellaman is amazing. This is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not gonna keep throwing shade at Marvel because Marvel is a giant that I respect and I love, but WB DC continues to kill it in their casting. They continue to kill in their casting with Chellaman and various other people, like just Nicole Maines and like
Well, Disney Plus just started. Give it.
Oh no, I'm not. Gonna happen. I hope that they continue to keep to. But like at this point, I'm like I'm getting so much on one side. I'm just like, if I'm not getting it on another side, I'm just gonna not pay as much attention. You know what I mean? But they did give me with Baby Yoda. I can't lie. They did give me with Baby Yoda.
I've seen fully grown. And this, I tell people this. I'm about to make it a joke at America's expense here. I've seen fully grown, huge, tattooed, conservative-looking men, and I go, "Baby Yoda," and they turn into full-on giggly, "Baby Yoda."
So I read to my sister. I read to my daughter's class this week, and the book I read was The Princess and the Pony, and it is literally about a warrior princess who wants a war horse, and she doesn't get a war horse. She gets a kind of awkward, adorable pony, and she's really not happy about it.
She's the Mandalorian.
She takes it to the battle, and so she takes this horse to battle, and what happens is all of the warriors, you know, male, female, whatever, big, little, they're all these really hulking brutes, and the pony comes in, and they're like, "Oh, it's so cute," and she ends up winning the battle. It's the thing, is that the whole moral of the story is no matter how, you know, gruff you are, you still can have that sensitive side.
I was talking, because, you know, I get to see people from other countries and stuff, and I was talking to them, and I was like, "Look, you know, I learned something profound in Baby Yoda about America. Agree on human policy? No. Agree on rights? No. Agree on everything else? No. A fictional character, we will rise as one nation." Yes.
Mm-hmm. Baby Yoda,
it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But there's just something so, like, it's just ridiculous how united this country is under
over Baby Yoda. And you know, the guy on Twitter who designed BB-8, so he's tweeting out and he's like, "We had no idea this character would be so popular." I'm like, "Bitch, you designed
BB-8. I was like, BB-8, I literally have a BB-8 Funko. Are you kidding me? I love my BB-8. I also have a Baby Groot, so I have a trend and a, you know, so I'm waiting for my official Yodito toy, so like, it's fine.
Yodito! I was telling my coworkers at work that they're calling him Yodito, and see, that's the thing, is that I work with primarily Latinx coworkers, and I go, "Yodito," and they're like, "Oh my God, are people really calling them that on the internet?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like,
"Oh, Yodito. So cute." Anyway, oh my God, we're way off track.
Yeah.
we're way off track, but that's
sorry, guys. We did season 2 predictions. Wendy has to get through her list. We have to get through Wendy's list.
There's some questions in here. A lot of this is stuff we talked about, and I'll go through those quickly. But there are some questions in here I think we do need to talk about as far as Angela next season. But so I think Ozymandias gets off. Either it doesn't go to trial or it goes to trial, and he's guilty as heck, and he says, "I'm guilty," and he still gets off. Because I just feel like that. He, at this point, almost wants, and as, you know, I know he fought it a little, but he wants to tell his story. This character, I'm not talking about the comics character, but this character in this Watchmen definitely wants to tell his story to the world now, at this point, 35 years later. Even though he's held his tongue all these years. And I would love to see Ozymandias taking control of the prison a la Lex Luthor or the Kingpin. Like, he goes in there, he's everybody figured out in like 5 minutes, and he's manipulating them into doing whatever he wants. And he wasn't able to do that with the Europeans, because they didn't have any wants or needs. So how do you manipulate someone with no wants or needs, right? But once you get people, they're easy to play. I think Angela wouldn't get powers right away, so she would like lose faith a little bit, but then she slowly starts to get them. I think Topher and Will are two voices, kind of like, you know, the angel and the demon, but neither one is good or evil. Like, Topher obviously is excited about finding out that she's Sister Knight, and Will is like, don't be Sister Knight. So I think those are the two voices, you know, as she starts to get powers from Dr. Manhattan about what you do. Although Will also did say that that Dr. Manhattan could have done more. Mm-hmm. Petey, I think it's pretty obvious. He goes rogue. Lori probably spends this season trying to catch him and you know, figuring out, is like, is it okay to let Petey do this? It might be okay to let Petey do it. I don't know. Either Petey, you know, realizes he shouldn't be doing it, or Lori's going to feel like it's okay for Petey to be doing it. I think Angela tries to, quote unquote, do more, but I think it's going to backfire. And I think she's slowly going to lose her sense of time and basically end up in the same. I can't see her not ending up in the same, with the same point at the end where she sees things so big that, you know, she sees the stars are already gone. I mean, that was quoted in this one too. She, like, it's just like, oh, you know, we're not even seeing living stars. They've all died millions of years ago. And, you know, it's just seeing it from that perspective, things start to lose hope. I hope that having Topher, which, you remember, John did not have a kid at the time. It is, maybe Topher could bring her back to reality the way that Lori brought back Manhattan. Just too late.
I think we talked about this, like how fiction doesn't usually show that mother and child relationship. You'd have that pretty well. So.
And she kept the ring. She still has the ring. So I think the question will be, you know, as she starts to lose her humanity, does she use the ring to forget about her powers? Or does she try to get control of them? And I don't know which way it would go. I said she could always use nostalgia to get her memories back. I think Beyond has to choose who she wants to be. We talked about that. I think Pirate Jenny gets the story. And like we talked about, I would love for her to raise Beyond. I think that would be fun. I mean, she's been raised so strictly. And I imagine like the Pirate Jenny would be like, we're going to stay up all night and eat cereal. You know?
Yes.
She can't.
Yes. Like, literally, all I wanted was more Pirate Jenny. That was, like, the one big thing I wanted this season.
Because original Beyond, like we said, original Beyond is Pirate Jenny from the song.
Mm-hmm.
And here is actual Pirate Jenny. And I think there would be some kind of new character introduced, you know, that kind of mucks up the works. Maybe it's a character from the original comics. So,
Dan Dryberg.
Dan could come in and he just totally screws everything up. We'll see what happens.
All right. So I think, Wendy, do you want to take us out?
All right, guys. So we want to thank you for joining us for these, I think there's 9 series episodes of Watchmen, but also for all 15 episodes of Watchmen podcast. If you still want to get in touch with us, let us know what you thought. You can email us at watchmentvpodcast@gmail.com. You can post a comment on our website, watchmenpodcast.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 918-200-9103. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at watchmenpodcast. On Twitter, you can follow us at watchmentalk. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. We always love it when you give us ratings and reviews. Watchmen Podcast is part of the DC TV Podcast Network, so if you are interested in other DC shows, you can check out Batwoman Podcast, Black Lightning Podcast, DC TV Classics, DC's Legends of Tomorrow Podcast, iZombie Radio, Krypton Podcast, Stargirl Podcast, Supergirl Radio, Swamp Thing Radio, The Flash Podcast, and more coming soon. You can subscribe to DC TV Podcasts on Apple Podcasts and follow DC TV Podcasts on Twitter and like DC TV Podcasts on Facebook. And I guess we don't have to say TikTok anymore because
I am the Eggman.
Cuckoo ka-choo.
Cuckoo ka-choo.
Thanks for joining.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.